Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 670, June 2023.
Welcome, everybody, to The Incomparable Mothership. I'm Chip Sutterth, and I am pleased to be your guest host for a little trip down memory lane for the first three, only three, last three seasons of one television show called Ted Lasso.
To the family we make along the way. And most...
Well, I'm Ted Lasso. This is Coach Beard here.
Oh, God, you're the new manager.
Yes, sir.
I didn't look, take all the grass.
Oh, no,
that's
very nice.
We just had it cut. I can go through the garbage if you want. I can get you some more.
That's all right. No need.
Yeah, you and the little guy gotta get on over here. Come check it out. But you know what I say? That's what I'm doing, though. I'm giving you that space.
I'd not expect you all to do this, but I hope you understand why we as Nigerians must.
Want me to tape?
What do you think you're doing?
Routine, aren't we? Don't wear the same kit.
But I have a secret. I make myself big. Before I go into the room, I find somewhere private. I stand up on my tiptoes, put my arms in the air, and make myself as big as possible to feel my own power. Like this.
Fuck, you're amazing. Let's invade France.
Hello, Coach. Really glad you decided.
Shut up. Just shut up. You had me a coach.
Been to Vegas many times. One night is good. Two nights is perfect. Three is too many. Ted is a man. Just a man. And as for the fragility of life, I'm so glad someone finally asked. Because, yeah, I got a few thoughts.
To the family we're born with, and to the family we make along the way. And most importantly, to Richmond!
Richmond!
Hey, don't worry about all that, okay? What do we say, huh?
Be a goldfish.
And that was 3 years worth, stretched out a fair bit, of Ted Lasso. Joining me for this discussion of where it started and how it ended, a veritable cornucopia of footballers. I've got Kathy Campbell here with me. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Let's invade France together.
James Thompson. Hello.
Hello. All human beings are opposed to the Laugh Police.
Shannon Sutterth. Hello.
Here representing some of the boss ass bitches.
And Aline Sims. Hello.
Jamie Tart, Oh,
man. I have been looking forward to this conversation for a couple of weeks now. Ted Lasso hit in the middle of the pandemic, and it blew up. And there aren't a lot of shows that prompt our Lord and Master Jason Snell to start up a Flashcast series on the TV feed. No, it wasn't even on the TV feed. It was its own thing. Football is life.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of shows that prompt that. So it was really big, really influential. Put Apple TV genuinely on the map. And then there was another season. And watching the show and experiencing the show sort of became a little more complex as it went on. So you know, we were going episode by episode throughout all three seasons, but now we get the chance to sort of look back on it and say, you know, was it all that? What worked? What didn't work? And just how the show changed from season one to season two to season three. So in the traditional of Jason Snell affiliated podcasts, I wanted to ask if anybody had an opening statement.
I think my statement is I don't get people who particularly hated this season and the last season. I've seen a number of reviews of the show. There was a Guardian review a few weeks ago.
That Guardian review was savage.
And I
ill-informed. That's the word you're looking for.
I don't get what show these people were watching, because it's not the show that I was watching. You know, there was, you know, okay, yeah, there was some stuff in this last season that didn't land quite as well, but the highs were still superb. I mean, this is like a whole load of actors and writers at their absolute top of their game. And, you know, all of these people, if they go off and do other shows, and we don't get any more of this, I will go and watch these people in other things. Because, like, you know, like, just about every single person in the cast is fantastic. And, yeah, this show to me was, like, as you said, it hit exactly at the right point. Well, right point, you know, like, the world was terrible. But, you know, we season one was just so perfectly timed that we... it was this absolute comfort watch. And then season two and season three were far more complex and, you know, much longer episodes and much deeper and looking at all this stuff. But I think that just kind of reflects how we all were. Like, you know, we wanted the fluff and the happy thing. And then we wanted to think slightly deeper about stuff. And to me, this series is like one of the all-time greats.
So Shannon interjected and said that the critics were ill-informed, and that might go a little too far for me. Kathy, what were you about to say?
I was just going to say, I can see how people, I don't understand it deeply because I loved all the seasons, but I can see and kind of understand why people didn't like season two or season three. Mainly because A, they're not ready to think deeper, and B, because they are comparing it to season one, whereas the lowest points in season three, excuse me, a little something in my throat there, are still so much better and more purposeful than so many other shows that have come out. And I think it's easy for people to say, oh, I hate this because it's not what I was expecting. Whereas instead, I'm choosing to look at it like, okay, why are people initially reacting like this? And what is it about these seasons that have made people decide to, you know, oh, I'm never going to watch it again, but wait, I'm going to come and comment on every comment that people make about how terrible it. I don't understand that side of things, because that's a lot of energy to put into a show that you supposedly hate, but, you know, it's fine. And so it will be very interesting to see where we sit a couple years from now. I really hope we get a Boss Ass Bitches show.
Yeah,
that's a whole other conversation that we'll have probably in the future, specifically about Keely and her storyline. But as a whole, it's still a beautiful piece of television. And the finale wraps it up in a way that is just glorious. It reminds me a lot of the Schitt's Creek finale, where I got emotional and felt content with where it left, even if I want some more.
Yeah, the reason I was going for ill-informed, basically, I think a decent number of critics were looking very hard for what they could tear down.
Yes.
Because, you know, the show did gain this incredible level of popularity. It has, like, broken records for the number of Emmys it's won. And some reviewers, instead of, you know, like, doing a balanced look at these things worked, these things they pulled off, these things didn't quite stick the landing, you know, some critics, unfortunately, just go for the jugular and, you know, whether it makes sense of what they're saying or not. And I think that's where some of that was coming from. You know, for me, it mostly landed as far as over the seasons. I was hesitant to start watching way back in season one, mainly because of the premise of the dumb American going over to England and flounder trying to figure out how to do these things, because I'm not good with secondhand embarrassment, and I was expecting a lot of secondhand embarrassment in what they were writing. I was not expecting the writers to be as balanced and clever as they were in leading you up to some secondhand embarrassment and then tilting things. That first press conference that Ted gets thrown into, where he, he's trying his best. He, you know, drinks his water and discovers, oh my God, it's got bubbles, you know, stuff like that. And just before it can get really bad, Rebecca steps in, and we know that Rebecca's doing it because she is preserving her plan, her master plan that she had in season one. But still, the fact that she steps up, puts the reporters in their place, and it doesn't get too bad. And that's what kept me watching, was the fact that the writers were doing a very good job of making this comedy without making it, in my personal opinion, unbearable. And then they started developing the characters, and they started developing the plot lines, and they drew me in. And I, you know, by the middle of the season, I was in.
Aline, any thoughts before we start digging into some of the specifics for the three seasons?
No, I'm ready to dig. Let's talk. All right.
Well, let's dig. First thing I want to lead off with is that it's possible to make too much of this, but both between comments that Jason Sudeikis and Brendan Hunt made and the freaking window behind Rupert in season three, analogies of this series and its structure to the original Star Wars trilogy have been made and I think are pretty apt. So here's my here's my opening thesis.
We're such nerds.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on one of the Football is Life episodes. I think you can compare season one to Star Wars, the original Star Wars episode, and season two to The Empire Strikes Back, and season three to Return of the Jedi. Here's my thinking. The first season is just really pure, and on some levels I feel like it's almost flawless. You could have even stopped if they hadn't been picked up for successive seasons, you know. That would have been a satisfying show, I think, in and of itself. And then season two, it gets more complicated, and you see Ted's demons laid bare, you see characters wrestling with stuff. And then I think season three gets a little simpler. And I'm saying that because you have characters having deep conflicts in the first season, the second season, just sort of on the screen. And then a lot of the stuff that happens in season three happens off screen. And they chose to spend more time on the reactions to the things than the things themselves. The most obvious example of that being, Ted's decision to leave happens in between episode 11 and episode 12. As far as how the show changed from season one to season two to season three, what do you think of my analogy? How tortured did I make it? And B, how did you feel the show's arc hung together from season one, season two, season three? Aline, got any thoughts on that?
I think by and large, it was what they needed to do for the three season run. If they had planned on a longer run, I don't think it would have been as satisfying. And I think that it had to follow this arc so that the audience would be invested, especially those of us who do not follow soccer/football. We had to learn a little bit with Ted, right? I think that was very intentional. Like, if you're targeting an American audience, a lot of people follow soccer. Like, it is definitely a sport here, but not as much as like football, baseball. So they had to kind of take us along for those teachable moments. They had to end the season the underdogs. It wouldn't have been emotionally satisfying, again, with the three series arc in mind. It wouldn't have been as satisfying if they had like come out on top every season. It would have just been like, oh yeah, like, of course they won. And so I appreciated that they kind of took us along this journey of team building and learning and self-improvement, because it's not, at its heart, as has been discussed, it's not a show about soccer. It's a show about, it's a workplace comedy, but it's also just, it's a show about growth. And I appreciate they plotted it out so that we could grow along with the characters and the team.
Yeah, I agree exactly. And I think, you know, that the soccer analogy of, you know, you win some, you lose some, but, you know,
and sometimes you tie.
And sometimes you tie. And but steadily, you know, ideally, you're getting better each season. You're getting better each game, is, you know, reflected in the character arcs. You know, it parallels very nicely because we see these characters, struggling through conflicts, hitting low points, getting better, and then maybe there's a valley, and then it starts going up again. You know, Ted's battles with his panic attacks and his struggle to accept Dr. Sharon's help. You know, that's a huge first step for him to say finally, okay, yeah, Doc, I need an appointment, and then he spends the next episode or two dodging her or slamming the door because he's not ready to do it, until he finally, you know, finds it in himself to start opening up and talking to her. And then, you know, there's more improvement. Nate, in season three, after, you know, going down this deep valley of letting himself and his insecurities ruin what he had at Richmond, and then back and forth, finding his way gradually back to them. Every time we thought he's okay, finally he's going to talk to Ted, or finally he's going to do the right thing. And then, you know, Rupert steps up like that, you know, shadowy bat on his shoulder, the little devil, to pull him back. But, you know, he eventually gets there. So I think that there's a parallel going on with the sports analogies and what we expect from sports and the reality of how people react. And I think that some of the blowback from some people was the fact that for whatever reason, they wanted the improvement faster and sooner. They wanted to see it step by step. That's not how life works. We don't get to see all the steps.
Yeah. And I think, too, looking at this show and trying to decipher what its purpose is. Obviously, not every show has to have a greater, you know, goal in mind, changing the world, blah, blah, blah. It can be just entertainment. But I think by having this type of greater story and these types of characters and being able to introduce non-toxic masculinity in a world to people that may not understand what toxic masculinity is without like feeling like it's an attack. We all know these types of people that you can't correct or help guide their mindset at all, because they'll think that you're, you know, telling them that they're a terrible person, and they get angry and frustrated and shut down. Whereas this show has brought these conversations in a safer way to help brains kind of process it a little bit better and a little bit easier. I've seen a lot of conversations online about people that have like been able to use this as a way to have conversations with other people in their families and their friends and stuff. And I think it's pretty special to have something that can be supportive and safe and give these larger ideas and also be really funny.
That's, I think that's a really fascinating way to look at this show, Kathy. Sort of toxic masculinity 101, which can be very frustrating for people who've already taken the course or right. who have already experienced it. This is a show, this is, the writer's room is fairly diverse, I believe, but this is a show that is show run by, you know, four guys who, it may be argued, are sort of patting themselves on the back for being so progressive and thoughtful. But when Nate does bad stuff, and we'll talk about Nate, I'm sure, quite a bit, because that's the most controversial arc of the whole series, I think. When Nate does really, really bad stuff before he betrayed Ted, and even after he betrayed Ted, some of the stuff that he does on the pitch early on in season three for West Ham to those players, you know, you kind of want to see him do the work. And I think the show demonstrates that he's, or at least the show tells us that he did the work kind of off screen without actually showing him do the work. And that had to have been frustrating for some folks. I think I've seen the tweets and the reviews.
I think in that case, what had been a strength of the writers early on sort of came back to bite them slightly, in that the writers wrote in ways to reward audiences for paying attention. Constantly recycling motifs, you know, references, callbacks, all of these kinds of things to help or to encourage the audience to pay close attention. And, you know, if you're paying close attention, you don't necessarily need every single thing spelled out for you. But they also, I do feel that they could have done a little more to reward the audience's paying attention by giving them some of what they hope to see. And, you know, some of it we got, some of it we didn't. So I think that is a valid point to be made.
I mean, I thought the fact that some stuff happened off screen, I actually liked that as a mm-hmm. the way that they were doing it, because it kind of like they were trusting the audience that mm-hmm. they didn't have to spell everything out. And, you know, yeah. the time was passing, you know, the whole thing was across a season of football. Soccer.
And it's football.
I think it's called series in...
Look. I'm going to not translate because it's just going to get hard.
Embrace your Scottishness. It's fine.
Yeah. One of the things I would say is like, despite being British, Scottish, I have zero interest in football. And I like this show. I really enjoy this show. And I started watching Welcome to Wrexham after this, mm-hmm. Which is the Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney buying the Welsh football team. And there is, tonally, there is quite an overlap in it, because it shows you all these different people, you know, who are around the football team, and you get to know them, and so I guess I like people, and it doesn't actually matter.
Weird.
Big if true.
But I mean, the people who are complaining, you know, like, oh, the end of season two is a downer, and the start of season three, you know, it's you know, everybody's in a dark place or whatever. They clearly haven't watched any trilogies ever, because
right?
You have
like,
to.
Have you watched yeah. anything ever?
You need to start people at their lowest point, so that they get to the top again. I mean, it's like it's also like every romantic comedy or whatever. There needs to be a point where you're brought to the low bit, so you get the contrast when you get to the high at the other end. So, you know, I can see, yes, some of the complaints, but I don't understand it, because the show is so clever, or I think it's clever anyway, the way it's written. I think that they earn the, you know, the people giving them sort of the thing about, yes, the you need to think a bit about it, but that's not a bad thing.
I understand the criticism about Nate, because I'm one of those people, like, I didn't need to be shown everything, but I do feel like they could have thrown us a couple more breadcrumbs along the way. And I said this in the Ted Lasso podcast, Football is Life. I recorded the penultimate episode, and like, I just needed one or two more stepping stones to be fully on board with not Nate being redeemed, but his process to realizing that he was on a path that wasn't super great. But I don't understand a lot of the criticism, like everybody else. I don't understand a lot of the criticism of especially season three, because it's like, do I think they could have done things differently? Absolutely. However, I think in the end it worked. And the thing about a series like this, this is not like Star Trek The Next Generation, where every episode is kind of its own little capsule and it stands alone. There is an arc. So you can't judge this series based on one or two episodes. It's really, well, I mean, you can. Obviously, you can. People have. You shouldn't. Yeah. You shouldn't judge it based on one or two episodes, because, again, it's not about the one or two things that happen. It's about the whole. And I really, as the criticism was coming in like mid-season, I was like, but you don't know where it's going yet. And I felt like the writers and the actors had done enough in previous seasons, even on the strength of season one, that I was willing to trust them to bring it to a conclusion I was satisfied with. And I think they did that. I think that they delivered.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
I think they did as well, but it's not binary good bad for me. I do think that the first two seasons were recognizably better, from a writing standpoint, than season three. I think that season three had a little bit too much show, a little bit too much telling and not enough showing, and
also trying to hit a whole lot of bases.
That's
a different sport.
Yeah.
point. You know, did we need Zava? I think we've got some, I think we can have a conversation about that. Did they need to spend as much time? You know, there were a couple of points where shooting had to stop, so the writing had to catch up. You know, there were some changes behind the scenes there that may have affected it. I think that season one was just lightning in a bottle. And I think that season two was deeper and better, honestly. And there were some people who were upset that it didn't have, it wasn't the just the hit of endorphins that season one was. But season one, we were watching it in the middle of lockdown. You know, how could we not react so strongly to that sort of positivity? I wish that season three had been more polished, but it still hit all the high points for me.
One of the things I would say about season three is also like the episode length pretty much doubled. You know, we basically got two seasons worth in the 12 episodes. And, you know, yes, there was clearly things going complications behind the scenes or whatever, But I mean, some of the episodes, like particularly the Sunflowers episode where they are in Amsterdam, which is, I think, probably one of my favorite episodes from the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, if you can do that, you can't write off the entire season and say it was bad or terrible that some people have done, because I think just like it's the highs that I'm seeing.
Can we stay in Amsterdam for a little bit? Because I've got a couple of clips that I want to show with you, and they come from that episode, which I think is possibly the best of the season. And the first one is, I think it's Ted's turning point, the character Ted's turning point in the entire show. So this is him having a conversation with Coach Beard on the bus.
Let me ask you a question here. Is this anything? The way I see it, we've been playing too rigid, you know? Our guys need freedom. Go wherever they want to go. Follow their guts, their hearts. As long as they remember to fill in the space that someone left behind. They gotta have one another's backs, that's for sure. But, you know, it's just constant, nonstop motion. Just going from position to position until positions don't really even exist anymore. It's fast, fluid, free. With full support.
You come up with this yourself?
Yeah. Congrats.
You should call it Total Football.
Ooh, I like that.
Which was invented right here in Holland in the 70s.
Oh. You think we should try it?
Yes, I do.
All right, cool. Total Football.
So the reason I pulled that clip out, two things. One, this is the moment where Ted really turns the dial from mediocre white man who's managed to find himself in charge of the whole darn thing and is actually, he's gotten it. He's gotten football. He's become a manager, a real football manager. And the other thing is all this stuff about the roles of the players on the field, the flexibility, the lack of rigidity, you know, that's part of the show's mission statement right there. Don't let people be caught in boxes and let people be their full selves. I think that's a real key moment in the series and a key moment in season three. Thoughts about Ted's journey from guy almost failing up to actually having some agency and becoming the honest to God manager of the team, as opposed to just the guy who makes everybody feel valued.
The thing I love the most about that entire little mini arc is that Ted gets his inspiration from yet another sport. He's watching a basketball retrospective when it hits him. That's always tickled me. He comes up with this. It turns out, yes, it's a thing, but that he drew his inspiration from another sport. I do think it's a very apt metaphor for, you know, what he is trying to accomplish with the team, to have them play as a team, to have them have each other's backs and support each other. So I genuinely loved that moment as well. And the fact that, you know, that the team took them a little while to get there. But, you know, once they were able to adopt it and adopt it successfully, their winning picked up again.
I will never feel good about the cords around people's privates piece of them of the team getting
it. Yeah, that was freaking hilarious, but also terrifying.
Yeah. James, your thoughts?
The thing that I come back to, kind of like, not the turning point, back in season one, the darts scene where he's talking about being underestimated by everybody. I think that's the point where you realize that he is more than just, you know, the idiot abroad who's like somehow managing to make people feel better. That he does actually, there's more to him. And, you know, I think that's the point also where Rebecca realizes that, you know, perhaps she's got this whole thing wrong. So that scene sticks in my mind as the kind of the point where we start to realize that, you know, he might not know the rules at this point, but he's getting there.
He doesn't need to know the rules to know how people work together and how they need to be working together. And I think that's the important thing about Ted as a coach and as a manager. It's not about the specifics. That's why he has the people that know the amazing things that they know. He has the ability to kind of pick from different people and different sources to be able to turn around and have these incredible, you know, things happen because he trusts those people.
Team from start to finish. You know, Ted's focus is on getting the individuals together, helping those young men become them their best selves in order to make the best team possible.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So another clip that I want to draw out from that episode involves Colin and Colin's story. And Colin's story is a really good arc in this season. And the piece that I wanted to pull out is not the part where he talks about wishing that he could kiss his fella on the pitch the same way that others can, but before that. And I think it actually ties in pretty nicely to what Ted said about total football.
Then the club brought in Dr. Sharon. And she helped me realize that I have an ache for both my lives to be my only life.
You just feel for the guy, and you've got people all over the place in the show Ted Lasso who are trying to put themselves together, are trying to be whole, complete, healthy people. And for some of them, they take a real hard turn in the wrong direction, like Nate. And then there's Colin, who in the end has that moment that has never before happened on a Premier League pitch in real life, where he does have that moment. I think that there's a lot that Ted Lasso, the show, wants to say about how people should treat each other and what their sort of ideal state is. It's like, I don't know how suspicious Jason Sudeikis is of therapy in real life, but this is a lot of people who've been to mindfulness retreats, it feels like, who've been writing this thing.
Can we just, as we come out of that scene, can we just shout out Trent Crim, who,
yes.
I think is, he has, you know, he's obviously much more of a main character in the season because he's embedded with the team writing the book. But I think he's one of my favorite additions to this season, just having him around and, you know, how he's revealed to be gay as well. And, you know, he's a sort of mentor figure to Colin. But just his presence around the kind of like management area, I think elevates the series. And he's just so good.
So freaking good. Yeah. I have to wonder if Trent was meant to be this present in the entire series, or if everyone just realized, oh my gosh, this is an incredible character. Let's figure out how to keep him around when he's no longer Trent Crim the Independent and is Trent Crim Independent, and see how to build that. Like, I'm sure it probably was like partially part of the story, because obviously, but I wonder if the deep, like, transcendent presence of Trent Crim in almost every episode was because he's so freaking incredible and the character himself just is a shining star.
And you can't let hair like that go to waste. Ever.
Right?
No.
You just can't.
But I remember, like, it was, I think, episode 3 in the first season where, you know, Rebecca gets Trent to, you know, follow Ted for a day, you know, sort of maybe, you know, maybe it's genuine foreshadowing. Maybe they were thinking that far ahead. But, you know, the fact that that was, like, you know, sort of not only the first opportunity for the writers to make Trent less of a surly journalist, because, you know, Ted wins him over and, you know, he writes the honest, thoughtful piece about the Lasso way in that first article. And, you know, from then on, you know, his questions, I mean, he's still a journalist in that season and the next season, but he's also, you know, being supportive. I mean, he actually, you know, he goes to Ted about the article, you know, that he's got to write about Ted having panic attacks, and breaks journalistic rules in telling him that Nate was the one who revealed it. I'm very glad that they found a place, whether they, it had been planned all along or if it was an inspiration somewhere in the writing and planning of season 3. I'm so very glad that they brought him there to be this extra presence, to let his reactions to things be a part of the action of the third season, as well as to be there for individuals.
Sure. He, in the same way that Colin's sort of looking to sort of bring different sides of himself together, you know, Trent lets go of the trappings and the negativity of being a British journalist and embeds himself in the team to write a book, becomes part of the, you know, he's a diamond dog, hilariously. yeah. I mean, and that's part of this whole, trend of people, trying to become, you know, better people. And let's drop in. There's a quote that Higgins has in the last episode that James wanted me to pull out. So let's play 12 seconds of that real quick.
Human beings never going to be perfect, Roy. The best we can do is to keep asking for help and accepting it when you can. And if you keep on doing that, you'll always be moving towards better.
Yeah, and I think that just sums up the whole show.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the closest to the summary of the arc of Ted and everybody involved. And I like Higgins is also another, there's all these like little side characters who are kind of, I wouldn't say they're undervalued, because obviously they are, but they're not like one of the main sort of cast, but they come in and they drop these truth bombs. And Higgins is just such another nice, because initially he doesn't come across particularly well, you know, at the start of the first season, because he's part of the Rupert's old guard to a certain extent.
He helped Rupert screw over, metaphorically, Rebecca, and then he helped Rebecca screw over Ted until he finally found his backbone.
Yeah. So. I just like that quote, and I thought it should be here.
So that is a short version of what Ted says at a key moment in the previous episode, in the penultimate one, when he's talking about second chances making Coach Beard deliver a very appropriately delivered expletive.
You know, I don't know about you, Coach, but I hope that either all of us or none of us are judged by the actions of our weakest moments, but rather by the strength we show when and if we're ever given a second chance.
So that sends Beard to Nate's flat in a hilariously shot scene where we find out that a long time ago, Beard was awful to Ted, and Ted, for no particular reason, forgave him. I have seen a lot of commentary about this show's attitude toward forgiveness. You know, Linda Holmes from NPR had a couple of Twitter threads. It said, basically, this is not forgiveness. This is just absorbing someone else's shit. And I wonder what you all think about what this show has to say about forgiveness. We talked about that a little bit on Football is Life for season 3, episode 11. But in the end, we see Ted just bending over to forgive Nate even before Nate said, I'm sorry. We've had several instances of people just being driven to let go of their animosity towards somebody who'd done them wrong. Did Ted Lasso, the show, make it all look too easy or too required?
I mean, some of it, yes, you could say it's a bit too easy, but this is a television show. You know, we can't show every single step. And like with Nate, the show tells us enough as to why Nate is the way he is, you know, like his upbringing and so many things. And I didn't like Nate's fall from grace because it was the kind of main thing in the second season, which was like not the happy, cozy, fluffy show that we knew. But I appreciated them doing it. I mean, it also gives you plot, of course, but you know, I appreciated like just showing that, you know, Ted could forgive him and Beard could forgive him, Beard being even stronger against that. I also just like the line about the loaf of meth, which made me laugh.
Yeah,
my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the thing is, any show that you write and you want to hang on to people's attention has got to have conflict. I mean, happy fluffy only lasts so long before you get bored. So, yes, conflict was needed. Yes, conflict was necessary in order to make reconciliations and the opening of those second chances and the forgiveness all the more satisfying. You know, maybe in, you know, for some of us, maybe we didn't see quite enough of the climbing back up to get to that forgiveness level, to get to that acceptance level. But I'm not sure I agree with Linda Holmes's stuff about, you know, absorbing, just absorbing other people's stuff. I don't think Ted's doing that. I think, you know, Ted is giving people the opportunity to rise to his expectations, and some of them take longer than others. But, you know, at least within the three seasons we have, you know, most everybody gets there.
And he doesn't, it isn't a case of Ted letting everybody walking all over him. He sets and enforces boundaries. It's yes. Just that he does not do that in a way that, and maybe this is part of the conversation about toxic masculinity, right? Because he's not Roy Kent setting boundaries by yelling and screaming and bristling at people. He's setting boundaries in a very, I would say, nice rather than kind way.
Yes.
And in that is maybe not a blueprint to aspire to in all cases, but I do think that, you know, we see Ted put Rupert in his place. We see Ted shut players down when they're getting too arrogant. We see him enforcing boundaries, and it's just not done in a way that most of us would recognize or acknowledge, right, as being a reinforcement of that.
Yeah, it's such a unique way to do it that a lot of people might not be able to identify the healthiness in it, because they see it as being walked all over, or like, oh, anyone can do anything and Ted will just forgive them. But there's something to be said about the whole thing, you know, forgive but don't forget type of a thing, and trust but verify. And I think it's important to have these boundaries in real life, because unlike sitcoms and other like television shows, it doesn't all wrap up perfectly at the end of a season, or even like not perfectly or whatever, but human beings as a whole are flawed and constantly are going to be making mistakes. And being able to use different interactions in a quote unquote fun television show to affect how you interact with humans in real life is pretty special, and in a healthy way. It's not necessarily, oh, I need to do this the Ted way, so much as what would it look, how would the Kathy way be? How could I utilize this way of forgiveness and still set my boundaries to protect myself and what I need to do to thrive and be my best self, as well as how does the team, whatever team I'm on as a whole, work, even though I don't play football?
I think also, like, Ted had a whole arc in season two about, you know, just being positive all the time kind of thing.
Yes.
Doesn't work, you know, doesn't fix everything. So, you know, he has to, you know, deal with himself as well, but and get himself to a place where he can, you know, forgive people.
So I want to, before we get too long into this thing, I want to just take a moment and enjoy some of the simple things in life, whether they are thinly papered over pastiches of well-known soccer players introduced in season three. One thing that you can definitely say about season three is that the cast fragmented into a lot of different directions, most notably with KJPR and Keeley's more limited interactions with the full cast. But this show had a lot of character arcs, a lot of places that those characters could go. And let's start off with just a quick lightning round of what your favorite character, your favorite characters or your favorite character storyline were for the last three seasons. And then which of them you think could sustain maybe a spinoff if the writer strike is ever resolved and Apple throws enough money at Sudeikis and Hunt and Kelly and say, you know, would some of you please give us some more stories with some of these characters? Which would you pick? Aline, would you be willing to go off? What was your first, who were your favorite characters of the show? And do you see them going somewhere after season three?
I really love the way Jamie and Roy's relationship evolved. The Amsterdam episode just sealed the deal for me. Jamie teaching Roy how to ride a bike was just like absolutely delightful. I need to go back and watch that and put it on in the background when I'm angry or whatever, because it cracked me up. And it's such a good, like, we get the enemies to lovers trope in romance a lot, and just having this like enemies to grudging friends thing is, I don't know, it just did my heart good. I've heard speculation of a Roy Kent series, and I don't know if I want that. I love Roy as a character. I would not want him as a friend, I don't think. But I love him as a character. I love seeing him interact with his niece. There's a lot I like about him, but I am not sure that he's someone I want to have as the subject of a series. I could be persuaded in another direction for sure, but I just can't see that. What I really want, as has been alluded to, is I want to see the women's football club, the Richmond version of that. And I want to see Keely and Rebecca killing it with a women's league. I think that would be amazing. Their relationship has been like hashtag goals. to date myself, for the entire series. Unlikely friends who just have this beautiful, open, communicative, supportive relationship. And we didn't get enough of that in season three. So I really need my Rebecca and Keeley fix for a new series, because I think it could be really good. I think that it works well with the themes of Ted Lasso, like Ted Lasso kind of being the like priming the pump for people talking about toxic masculinity. There's more stuff that they could tackle with a women's football club and a story about a women's football club. And let's face it, like, women's soccer, especially in the US, any women's sport is definitely given short shrift. So I'd love to see it be the subject of a well-regarded series.
Yes. Well,
Can I just say that this is not a draft, but Aline just picked everything that I was about to say.
I agree 100%. Everything, as Aline was starting to say, I was like, dang it. Yeah.
You can't have Keeley and Rebecca too. That's who I was going to pick. I mean, what I would say on top of all that, there's the line in, I can't think it was the last episode or whatever, where with the title of the book, and, you know, the Lasso way becomes the Richmond way. And there is the line, which I think has got to be pretty meta, where they say, you know, just change the title. It was never about me. So I would like to put, my prediction is, because the book goes from the Lasso way to the Richmond way, the name of the spin-off series, it's just going to be called Richmond.
AFC Richmond. I agree with that. I would love to see more of the team and how they go forward, because, you know, over the three seasons, there were so many of these secondary characters that, you know, they maybe didn't go through major arcs the way the top level did, but they still went through arcs. They went through growth. I mean, you know, Danny was, he started out as the human golden retriever. And in season three, he's still the human golden retriever, but we got to see him, you know, go through season two, you know, have that huge, you know, huge mistake in front of all of the fans, go through the yips and find himself again. We see Isaac becoming the next captain and figuring out how leadership works. We see, you know, Colin and his storyline. You know, this season there was kind of a focus on Van Damme, you know, the goalie who was just sort of a joke Zorro in season one. And he becomes this major part of season three's victories, you know, in to that point where he's literally a brick wall in front of that net, you know, almost all by himself as the team is playing a man down. I would love to see more of these characters. They're wonderful. Yeah. They gel. They do so well together. So I would be happy with that. My second option is give it a few years, let the writing team regroup and catch their breaths. And show me the second generation. Show me Nora and Henry and Phoebe. You know, Henry comes over and he plays soccer in England. You know, Nora is, you know, following in Rebecca's footsteps and learning how to be an executive. I don't care how they do it, but, you know, those child characters were so, so good in the first three seasons. You know, give me more.
I just remembered the girl who's playing football in the streets.
Shannon, get her too.
She's a shoo-in for the women's team.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yes, I love that. My biggest complaint about this season was Keeley's storyline and the fact that they completely just like regressed from everything that she got to do and grow and be away from a wag and be her own boss and her own personality and her make her own choices to being this. I don't even know what trope she became, but the fact that there were so few interactions with her and Rebecca in a way that if she had had more girl time and listened to her friends and had those moments instead of just missing her calls and like ignoring her calls and stuff, it could have been so much healthier and so much better as a whole. It was really extremely frustrating to not have Keely be as amazing as she is. And I hope that the future brings the opportunities to bring the Keely back that we know and love. That moment where she's talking to Rebecca about, you know, losing the funding and stuff. And Rebecca's like, oh, I basically have that in cash in my purse. And it's just like this moment of, oh, I can do this without harming my friend was like wonderful, because Keely did want to do it herself, but also with it, she wasn't really doing it herself. This whole, you know, the venture capitalism is a whole other conversation that, you know, is not this show. But I want to see, I was happy to see Keely kind of get her power back in a way that she didn't have the first, you know, three quarters of the season. And I want more of that, especially with how hard fought it was. But I did appreciate the her shutting down the boys who are coming fighting over her. And she's just like, no, neither. Neither. I am not a prize to be won.
When we're complaining, I would say I didn't like what they did with Jack and Keely, because like the one kind of gay relationship that we were really saw, you know, Jack turns out to be, you know, Rupert-like, at least in part. And it just really rubbed me the wrong way. You know, I was glad initially when they introduced the character and Keely ended up in a relationship, because I was like, yes, you go off and you go with somebody who actually appreciates you. But it turned out that that wasn't the case. And anyway, I didn't like it.
I understand. And I also feel the disappointment of Keely's arc this season. However, I think it is extremely realistic. And I say that as a person who is entrepreneurial and who has been going through some stuff lately. And it's just, I saw myself in Keely, because she was in the situation she was in. I don't think she was in over her head, but I think because of the whole way venture capitalism works, she'd ceded a lot of control of her business. She was trying to placate these people who had given her money, and she wasn't able to be true to herself, which in like she was when she was completely independent and starting off in PR, well, in her modeling career and everything. But I think this is another case of just like, I don't feel like I had enough breadcrumbs to lead me to Nate's turnaround. I don't necessarily think the writers gave enough breadcrumbs about Keely's arc, because I can read or put my interpretation or whatever. I think I'm reading between the lines anyway, because it's something that I am currently going through the same thing that was shown for Keely, right? But a lot of people haven't experienced that. And if you've never been entrepreneurial, you've never been in a weird workplace situation where you're stifling yourself, you know, whatever, I think that that doesn't necessarily follow. And it just needed more time with Rebecca so she could say, you know, it's really hard having VC investors because whatever, you know, just a little bit more handholding for the audience. I think that maybe the writers trusted us a little bit too much, because as Shannon pointed out earlier, like previously they'd kind of like self-referenced and trusted the audience to pick up on details in that way. But I think that this season they were pulling from the outside a little too much and trusting the audience to understand the experience a little too much. I don't know, but like I understand where people are coming from not liking Keeley's arc. But I also understand being right in the middle of where she was.
Yeah, for me, as you were talking, I was thinking about how they built up her successes as she did the PR work for Richmond, you know, to the point where it became a point of contention between her and Roy, because Roy sees she gets the magazine spread and Roy sees, you know, just how far she's come and just how much potential she has. And for me, her trying to figure out her role leading the company, you know, felt like Keeley herself recognizing, how the heck do I fulfill this potential? You know, what do I do now that I have to, you know, meet all of these expectations that have been set up, you know, and then, you know, things like, you know, her bringing, you know, she meets her friend Shandy. Shandy is somebody familiar, somebody who, you know, she grasps onto as, you know, something to support her. And, you know, while that hiring of Shandy turns out to be a mistake, it also helps her break the ice with Barbara.
Yeah.
You know, and Barbara eventually turns out to, you know, to be, you know, to come in as her partner in the firm at the end. So it worked more for me as far as Keeley's own story, but I would have loved, you know, it did take her away from the main cast too much for me. I didn't get enough of interactions with everybody else.
I think a big problem that I also saw with this whole thing was Keeley didn't have the wins that we had seen her as this boss ass bitch in the past. Everything, she was in over her head in these situations. That's why she called, like, pulled in Shandy, because of that one moment at the photo shoot or filming or whatever it was where it worked out really well. And she's like, oh, I need some support. I need someone to help me do this because I can't do it myself. Whereas we don't see any successes. You don't see any of these like great interactions with clients or deals that she had in the last two seasons, including, you know, the whole banter and all of this stuff. All you saw was mistakes that had been made. And that, I felt, really minimized her skills and her journey, because as she's second guessing herself, there was no wins at all. I cannot think of something that worked out in season three from her PR firm. It was all mistakes or bad things that happened. And I think that really cheapened Keeley's character for me. Because yes, obviously, when you're running your own business as opposed to just being freelance, like, and you have staff and all of these things and make mistakes, like, yes, that's fine. I get it. But there was no... Where was Keeley's redemption? Okay, that's what I want. Like, yeah, she came around and thankfully Rebecca came and was able to help her and all of this. But you don't see her succeeding in ways that we had seen her succeed in the past, and that made it feel really not great. On top of the relationships, like, what? Come on now. Yeah, it just made me really, really angry. And so, writers, you can get my forgiveness by coming to my door and showing me the Rebecca and Keeley Women Take Over the World show that we all deserve.
I was just going to say about Rebecca's storyline this season with the psychic.
I don't even want to talk about it. It just makes me angry. Women got screwed over in this season. I'm yelling.
That is, like, I've got a line in my notes which just says basically how they treated the women in general in this season, because I hated that storyline with a passion. And I kept waiting for them to subvert it in some way, and they didn't. I liked the Dutch pilot. He seemed good. And I, you know, that whole her falling in the canal and whatever, I like that bit. But the whole, like, you know, all the matchbook and all this, it just grated on me. And, like, so the that is the thing that I dislike about this season in general, is how they treated the women. And I liked everything else, but change that, please.
The psychic bit, I agree, didn't really seem to go anywhere. It's as if the writers were trying to be cute or overly, you know, or give the audience something to speculate about. I don't know. But I did like the fact that we do see, you know, Rebecca, not again, the writers leaving us to fill in a decent number of gaps, but Rebecca gets to a point where, you know, not only is she over Rupert to a point where she's not looking to use the team or use the various or use soccer or use against him, but she has actually left him behind by the end. Yeah. So, you know, we do get that. The writers do give her that, that ability to completely move past Rupert and, you know, walk away and realize, you know, yeah, he's never going to change. He was never going to change. And it was never my fault. And I'm done. So I did like that part.
This gives me the opportunity to segue into mentioning a name that has been mentioned entirely too little. And I'm very cross with all of you. And that would be one Sam Obisanya. Let's go to the audio tape.
I understand. Take as long as you need. It's okay. Thank you. But Rebecca, there's something I should warn you of. I'm only going to get more wonderful.
He's only going to get more wonderful, and
it's true.
It's absolutely yeah. true, and I'm not sure what the story arc could be, but I'm not sure what you'd need to surround Sam with for a spinoff focused on him necessarily, but he was so good. Toheeb Jamoat was so good all three seasons. He just grows in power and agency and character and strength. The episode with his father, all the feels,
so good.
And the team repair, the team repairing his store. You know, that story is taken care of and kind of dismissed in one episode. But there is so much more to say about footballers of color and Sam's story. I whether there is a Roy Kent or an AFC Richmond story, or if the men's team gets some cameos in the story of the creation of the women's team, whatever, I want to see more of Sam and more of Toheeb Jamoat.
He is one of my favorite characters. Just a delight on screen. Every scene, he's amazing. Yeah. I would watch a Sam spinoff for sure.
I think a Sam spinoff would be restaurant Sam, restaurateur, yeah. franchising, maybe doing different varieties, using the food and culture around the restaurant that he's doing as a way of like providing social commentary as a whole, maybe mix in some politics. Like, you can get a good story there with the occasional, you know, Richmond boys coming in and other favorites. I could absolutely see that.
I started off, you know, pointing out the analogies between Ted Lasso and Star Wars, as an incomparablest would be prone to do. But the parallels between Ted Lasso and Cheers are very, very obvious as well. And Cheers showed you that the spinoff doesn't have to resemble the original in any yep. way. Just yeah. take mm-hmm. the characters and do something with them. So that's an intriguing idea.
Well, along that same line, let's have a May. Let's have, you know, the
yes.
Tales from the Pub.
Yes. Tales. Yes.
I just want this secret reveal that May's been a Slitheen behind the bar all the time, all along.
That's crossing one too many streams.
No. But let's have, you know what? We don't even need a full series of each of these stories. We could have a show that's individual episodes of individual storylines, like continuing on. So you have one episode that's all about Sam's restaurant, one episode that's Tales from the Pub, one episode that is Beard being Beard, you know, all of these things that are like a, what is it called? You know, like the Black Mirror vibes.
Anthology whatever. Show.
Yes. Yes. An anthology show. It would not be as fulfilling as the Boss Ass Bitches show that I desperately want and need and deserve, but I would also be okay with that.
So going by my previous title suggestion, if we call this series that we're pitching Richmond, yes. then it works yep. rather than AFC mm-hmm. Richmond because it's yep. all of Richmond. So that yes. I think
true. The community.
I think Apple should contact us and we'll set up a writer's room.
I am more than no, willing no, no, to no, assist. No.
We are not scabs. We are not scabs. They got to settle oh. this.
No, in the okay. future. Listen, by the time this gets to Apple's ears, the writer's strike will be solved and
look,
fixed.
Knock on wood.
I'm just happy that I still own VaraniSports.co.uk, which is the URL
I love that.
Prominently Brilliant. Featured even in this season, even though there was a rumor that like, Nike or something was going to start doing the strips. But that no, it was still there, and it still links to this podcast. So
amazing.
Perfect.
Hey, we've been going for a good more than an hour, which means that we've actually gone past the length of a typical season three Ted Lasso episode this time around. But I did want to sort of get some final thoughts. It seems like all of us anyway were satisfied with the way that Ted Lasso ended, certainly satisfied with the series when you look at all three of them put together, and we're all open to more stories set in Richmond or with these characters if they come to pass. Any other final thoughts about Ted Lasso?
I wish the Zava arc hadn't happened.
Yeah.
It honestly is the one thing that could be taken out. They could have found another way for Richmond to get enough wins to stay afloat.
You know, yeah. I was kind of okay with it just because it was at least a nod to the fact that sports are complicated and sometimes you can't have the exact team hanging around each other for two or three years at a time. But
yeah, it's the one thing though that to me felt like the writers indulging themselves in referencing real world soccer, real world
yes.
football.
Or yeah. it's some executive was like, okay, I need this. And the writers are like, are you sure? And he's like, yes, or I'm taking away your funding. And they're like, cool, we'll make it so that everyone hates it. So nobody wants more Zava. And here you go.
Poochie went off to his home planet.
I think the thing for me is that I think I would have been okay with it if the other pieces we've talked about hadn't been dissatisfying. And mm-hmm. I feel like it was just a thing that was introduced and then quickly taken away and then barely referenced later through the end of the series, where instead of that, we could have had just that little bit of handholding that people needed to get more on board with Nate, to get more time with Rebecca and Keely, to see Keely win, you know, something. It just felt unnecessary given the other weaknesses of this season.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, like at points we've sounded quite down on this season, but I still like really enjoyed the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I watched yes. it. Yeah, it was one of the shows that I would be watching week to week that we would watch with breakfast in the morning on the Wednesday because, you know, it I think it goes mm-hmm. up like, well, while we're asleep. But that was a kind of, I'm going to watch this first thing because this is yeah. a little treat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been kind of focusing on season three and, you know, the bits that didn't land. But overall, I think it landed well. And it is certainly something I will go back and watch again. If a spinoff happens, I will certainly see what they come up with. And I think, you know, overall, I think overall they succeeded in, you know, the various messages about general positivity and optimism in one's life, in taking care of oneself mentally, you know, all of these different pieces they had that they wanted to put out there into the conversations. Overall, I think they did most of what they needed or wanted to do.
Yeah, I think as a whole, the idea of having a conversation about toxic masculinity in a space that seems to be fairly, I don't want to term it a safe place because, you know, all of the reasons, because society is terrible sometimes, but being able to have these conversations in ways that feels easier to have with people that maybe aren't on the same internet that we are.
Maybe non-threatening.
Yes, non-threatening. That's exactly it. And be put in terms that they can understand and feel positive about. I think that overall was a great aspect and a great thing to put out into the world when we needed it as much as we did. And I'm excited to see other shows maybe in the future when the writer's strike is over, because that's going to happen at some point in the future, I hope, try and recreate this and hopefully succeed in a way that feels authentic to how they want to do it and feels supportive and lovely, because the world needs more joy.
And I would say, as I kind of echoed earlier, so many of the actors in the show I didn't know before, and now I just want to see what they're going to do next.
Yep, me too.
I am just thrilled that we had this series, grateful for it, looking forward to something new. And I do want something more from this team after they've had a good long rest and the writer's strike is resolved in the writer's favor. And then, you know, Brandon Hunt and Jason Sudeikis have said that their original idea, well before that they successfully sold the show to Apple and Warner Brothers, was to follow the format of the UK Office, you know, 2 6-episode seasons and then a special. They got a lot more than that, and I'm glad. And they could do whatever they want to extend the Ted Lasso cinematic universe if they choose, and I think I'll take it. So that has been the Mothership wrap-up for Ted Lasso. Kathy Campbell, thank you so much for joining me on this one.
Barbecue sauce.
Aline Sims, likewise, thank you so much.
Do, 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 do.
Shannon Sutterth, thank you.
You're very welcome. In this case, this is a time I will not be a goldfish because I want to remember all of this.
And finally, James Thompson, thank you so much for joining us from the Kingdom of United.
I will now dedicate all of my time and all of my energy to my family and my avocado farm.
And on this on that note, on that bombshell, as another British show like to say, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time on the Incomparable Mothership. Take care.